So Theriel also made me see Lucy, which was very stupid.
I haven't seen that, but I did like Chris Straub's Sought For You version of it. Did you read that?
No, I don't subscribe to any Christopher Straub things.
Ow. I'll link this in the side nod. It's worth reading, I think.
Yeah, I like this Ghostbusters one.
Actually, I linked other people to this, and Vincent described it as the one good thing by Chris Straub he'd seen. Tagline. Human beings were given 100% of a brain. What would happen if we used more than 10% of it?
That is the actual tagline.
It's great.
Yeah. That was Morgan Freeman, too, incidentally, delivering the exposition on that score. He says so much ridiculous bullshit about what percent of the brain you use and what you can do with it. It's like, you're sort of entranced by trying to figure out where they think they're crossing the line between fact and fiction, because it is nowhere near where they actually cross it. Like, the notion here that this is some sort of, like, you kind of get the worry comes up that this is like, what the bleep do we know or whatever, and that there's some stupid cult behind it pushing their thing with the new age and the quantum physics. No, this is like,
it'd almost be better if it were.
This is to that as Jack and Jill is to a standard schlocky movie. It's like, it's not even a phony philosophy. It's like, it's just borrowing the jargon of that. But there's really nothing here other than someone who's good at directing action scenes wanted to make a movie where something happened. It's like, yeah, with 60% of your brain, you can probably levitate objects. Why not? I figure 60%, sure.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But it's a weird...
Did they really break it down like that? Like,
oh, yes.
Some powers at 50%, then some more at 60%.
Yes, they do.
Nice.
But it's a weird movie in terms of the structure of it, because it's like, the whole point of it is that Lucy is basically just sort of sleepwalking through the conflict of the thing from about the beginning of the second act, you know. There's no sense of, there's no sense that anyone has even the slightest chance of stopping her, or even really a sense that they were intending to give you a sense of that. There's scenes are framed with, you know, the sort of the intensity and the high speed of a typical, like, action thriller, but, you know, there is no dramatic tension, because Lucy is God, like, within the beginning of Act 2, and you realize that very fast. There's, like, a scene where she walks into a hallway, and there's, you know, 27 armed French FDA agents pointing guns at her, and she says to the main one, "I need to talk to you alone," and then she just sort of does something with her fingers, and everyone else in the hallway just falls asleep. And it's never explained how she can do this specific thing, because it's not a specific thing that she can do. She can just do stuff like that, pretty much carte blanche.
It's a weird science sort of thing. What if somebody could do whatever the plot needed?
Right, and she's also, like, completely evil computer-style, laser-focused on what it is that she's doing. It's not as though the uncertainty of the film comes from her motivations and, you know, will she do this or that? Will she remember what she's intending to do with her powers, or will she get distracted or tempted by this? No, that's not really an issue either. This is like, no, we're just, it's like you're watching a speed run.
Maybe you get that in written science fiction sometimes. Story of what if somebody was ridiculously overpowered, watch them do some cool stuff.
Like, what's an example of that?
I was going to say True Names and Other Dangers by Bernard Benji, but that gets some tension by having multiple people who are ascending to transhumanist godhood.
That's a different story, though.
Conflict, so.
I don't know quite what the story is with, what's his name? Gary P. Rastoff, but at times.
Yeah, I guess he does have a bit of that.
I mean, I guess it's
about somebody who ruled over a billion galaxies.
Yeah, like, I'm thinking specifically of the scene where the guy moves his fingers and he has this giant arm where the fingers are so far away that they're distorted
by the... I told you I'd never hold a star in the palm of my hand.
Right. I mean, most of the sort of like introspection Lucy does is pretty much in that vein. You know? Like she, the reason why she's exposed to this drug is she gets sort of unwillingly roped into being a drug mule for these evil people who you think you're going to learn more about, but they become irrelevant so fast you never really do. But like there's this evil guy, you know, it starts in Hong Kong and he's so scary in the first act, and then, you know, it's like a little way through act two, Lucy comes back and you know, stabs him through both hands with some knives that she had into the arms of his chair, and she needs to know where the other drug mules are so she can get the drugs from them too, because she's running out, you know, which provides some temporary tension. But it, you know, it's like a Flowers for Algernon thing that she grows out of pretty, you know, you're not really worried that she's going to die because she runs out of brain juice or something. She's clearly calculated it better than that. But anyway, you think that the scene with her, like, returning to confront this guy is going to be something revengey, you know? Or that, you know, maybe at least sort of vicariously on the audience's part, like, yeah, stick it to him, but even though she's at this point just emotionless and needs to get information out of him. But no, because she doesn't even torture him or threaten him or anything. She just says some odd philosophical stuff while he screams and then, you know, just reads his mind. Scene over. It's like, that's not how you write that scene. It's like, that is a completely incompetently written scene from the point of view of, you know, normal writing.
Yeah, but that's what would have happened.
That's, I think, the point where I realized this director is just writing this, like, chronologically at this point, aren't they? Seeing what would happen. They have no plan.
How does it end? Is that the ending?
No. That's like partway through Act Two. It ends with a whole bunch of sort of 2001 A Space Odyssey style bullshit, you know?
Nice. Pretty much. That film.
And a throwaway line at the viewer relating back to the opening narration that supposedly, you know, gives you direction in life because somebody 10 times smarter than you figured it out and told you, but which has a fairly threadbare justification. That said, not entirely illegitimate. It kind of fits with what Dan Mitchell said his impression of the Harlequin was, actually. But, yeah, certainly the dramatic weight given to it seems completely spurious. Yeah, Morgan Freeman plays the scientist who knows things about brain stuff and has a PowerPoint presentation on it that we cut to for no justifiable reason as Lucy is, you know, gaining these abilities or whatever. It's just like, it's the most ham-handed thing you've ever seen. It's ridiculous. But it really isn't as though the director's bought into some coherent but sadly delusional idea of how the brain worked. No, I mean, if you look at it, I forget the guy's name who directed it, but he's also done a bunch of other action movies, which are praised for having good action scenes, and not even really discussed in any other terms. I've seen one of them, I think, The Transporter. It did have good action scenes, and that's all I remember.
Let's see what I've seen of his. I've seen, he did The Fifth Element?
Oh, yeah, he did that, too.
Okay, I've seen that.
Yeah, I've seen the riff tracks of that.
Wait, he was a producer on Taxi? Oh, wait, not the TV show.
The kid at the police station eats Pop Rocks and drinks soda, but never explodes. It is possible the explosion happened off camera. I thought that was a notable little joke because it's sort of between the cracks of like 4 or 5 more obvious jokes. It's like there's a whole bunch of things wrong with that, but they're all sort of in different categories.
Like about Taken. Matt was talking about Taken earlier.
Was he? What do you say about it?
He was trying to remember the name of that detective thing that references Taken a lot.
I thought that was it.
Yeah.
What was the name of that?
Mike Detective.
That's right. Mike Detective. Yes. And that's all I thought of when I noted that in his credits. I was like, Taken. There's actually no sex in the movie at all. See, this is... Christopher Straub clearly has not seen the film, because, like, this dialogue he wrote
This
for
is
it...
not much of an exaggeration.
This is actually a, in some ways, a more smooth way of delivering the exposition, in that they, you know, this is two people talking to each other who are relevant to the plot in another way, whereas what actually happens in the movie is we just cut to Morgan Freeman explaining it for no reason.
Who is he explaining it to?
Some guy in a lecture hall. You know, lecture hall full of people studiously taking notes on what he's saying. No, no impression of who he is, why we care. He has no prior relation to Lucy at all. He's just there to tell you how it works. Ta-da! It's not incompetently made in a general way, in the way that, like, The Hogfather was. It's just like whoever was writing it simply didn't care about what a normal person cares about when writing a movie. And nobody else in the production process did either. Apparently.
That actually makes me consider watching it.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to recommend it.
Yeah. Would you suggest it?
In an official capacity?
Yeah, it's too late to do that for...
No.
For this week.
No, I wouldn't do that either. Another thing I noticed during it was that Scarlett Johansson kind of bears a resemblance to Kristen Schaal. Like,
yeah.
if you imagine Kristen Schaal as a caricature and you sort of uncaricature her towards just a blank person, you sort of get Scarlett Johansson somewhere along the way. She also played the voice of her in Her. You know, the movie with the AI phone wife thing, whatever the fuck it was. I never saw that.
Neither did I, but Lewis did.
Yeah, I remember. He did. He said it was disturbing. According to, I think, overthinking it, she was chosen for that role because of her voice as a very breathy human quality to sort of add flavor to the artificial intelligence aspect of it.
Hmm.
Presumably the same reason she was cast in this. But I think Kristen Schaal would have been much better at that because she has she has a great voice. You know who she is, right? She does the voice of, like, Mabel on that stupid show with the kids and the mystery.
The Gravity Falls.
That.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
Oh, well, she does the voice of the girl with the rabbit ears in Bob's Burgers. Have you seen that?
No.
Oh.
No, she's on The Daily Show, right?
Right, she's on The Daily Show.
I think you're the right person.
Yes.
Yes, I am.
Usually women's issues. But she has a great voice. I think she's my favorite voice actor. She mainly plays screechy little girls who are horrible and no one can deal with them. But I think that she would be an excellent...
Oh, Griffith's like Dizzy Buzz Buzz?
I don't know who that is.
You remember Barney Google and Snuffy Smith?
Yes, sort of. Vaguely.
You remember the cartoon show they made of it?
I vaguely remember the theme song. I don't think I ever saw the show.
Yeah, let's see if I can find an episode of that.
Oh, she plays Trixie in the Toy Story movies, who is the female counterpart of Rex. So apparently Kristen Schaal is the female counterpart of Wallace Shawn. Oh, and she was in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, too.
I'm linking you to an episode of Snuffy Smith show.
All right, well, since this is someone I'm trying to explain to you, I'll leave that for later. I don't
for some reason, it's called Snuffy Smith and Barney Google.
Googly eyes.
Also, you probably don't need to actually watch that.
Yeah.
You probably got that impression already.
Well, I plan to maybe open it in a tab and then close that tab later.
Sounds like a good time.
The thing is, like, if you were doing a movie in which you had a Kristen Schaal-type character in a main character role, And it was a character that, you know, you just needed a voice for because you were doing something animated, thus implying that it had something of a budget, then you wouldn't use Kristen Schaal, you would use Sarah Silverman. But I would use Kristen Schaal. Because I like things that are more unbalanced than people generally do. But, like, Wreck-It Ralph is a good example of that. Vanellope von Schweetz is a Kristen Schaal character, essentially, but she's in a main character role, so. But, like, I think if you had Kristen Schaal redub the voice part of Lucy in Lucy, that would be just hilarious on its own.
The movie... Wouldn't you have Lewis redub that part?
No, I don't think that would work. But, like, the movie on its own, it's not as though it was bad enough that I laughed at how bad it was. It was just sort of, like, vexingly or confusingly bad. But with Kristen Schaal doing the voice... Because the thing is, it's like, the casting of Scarlett Johansson, her sort of, you know, to give the fundamental humanity to a role that might be sort of, like, uncomfortably computery or fail to evoke empathy in the audience or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the same thing that Kristen Schaal's voice would do, except it would go too far, right? It would anchor it back to a familiar reality in a way that made it just... that sort of highlighted the idiocy of every scene, I think. I wonder if I could get her to do that.
What's that for her?
That'd be funny.
Yeah, might do it.
The other way I think about it, what would probably happen is that she would, like, give it one take and, you know, probably, like, it wouldn't be too difficult to just desync the subtitles so that you knew what was going to be said a bit before it was said. But you'd still screw up now and then and just start saying things that weren't actually what was said. Yeah, when I say Sothereal forced me to see it, I really mean that, too. It's not just a sort of a thing where that's, like, the reason I assigned to why I was doing it in my head, but, I would not have done it had circumstances not seemed to be sort of, like, explicitly twisting me into doing so.
What circumstances are those?
Well, how it started was I was just, like, walking down the street talking to myself and happened to be near the theater, and I said, yeah, perhaps I'll go see a movie. And then the other voice that was talking at the time was like, no, you're not. You're not going to see a movie, chicken shit bastard. You're not going to just go and see randomly a movie you know nothing about by yourself because... you'd worry that, you know, it wouldn't be good, and then you couldn't just put it on pause or something and make you uncomfortable, like, scrib it, or whatever. So, and indeed I didn't. But I walked past the theater, and I looked at the posters to see if there was anything that caught my eye as being something that, you know, like, intuitively suggested to me as being some sort of thing intended for me. And none of them really did. It was just, you know, stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy or whatever. Until I got to Lucy, and I was like, all right, well, obviously it's that one. But I'm not going to see that because that's stupid.
Wait, why was that obvious?
The movie poster is just her eyes staring at you.
Ah.
But, so, yeah, I walked on and vaguely said something about perhaps downloading it and watching it on the computer, but I never did that. And, then following that was the nonsense with the, Adderall supplier running short and prescriptions not being fillable at the pharmacy and not being able to transfer them because they're electronic and, you know, my psychiatrist being out of town until... 2 months from now or whatever and being generally uncontactable anyway, and so it's just sort of like one of those ugly sort of things where in theory there was a way to twist around the pieces and navigate the bureaucracy in order to prevent going into withdrawal for days, but I had already lost the attention necessary to do that at the point when I realized that was the case, so I was sort of resigned to that being the case. Nonetheless, I did call my psychiatrist to, you know, rather the office at which he would be in months, who are generally sort of disorganized themselves, and before I could even explain what the problem was, my cell phone ran out of batteries, and that was the day that I was talking to you last on the Hangouts thing, and I think I ended the conversation by just hitting the letter S a bunch of times.
Yeah, I interpreted that as hissing.
Yeah, I figured that was the natural interpretation, like a snake.
Yeah, like a punctured balloon.
Like, yeah, but I typed all that crap at the end without even looking at the screen because I was too antsy to connect with anything. So then I went for a walk, which I took my umbrella for, as sometimes I do, despite it not being raining. And I guess I was walking down to the psychiatrist's office because it is within walking distance, and I was antsy enough that I was sort of going for a walk anyway, and I figured I could, you know, maybe make an attempt to get contact with my psychiatrist in person since my phone was out of batteries, and maybe that would be better anyway because, you know, in person they might take my request more seriously or something, but really thinking, no, that's stupid, I should just wait until my phone is charged and then call them again because I don't have any of the information about anything on me, only at home. But that was sort of my intention, and as I got near the psychiatrist's office, I went by the theater again, and I was like, maybe I'll just change my mind and see a movie, but not really. Maybe I should see Lucy or something. Well, I'll see what times it's playing, at least. So I went in to see what times it was playing, and it was playing right then, like the previews had almost started. So I bought a ticket, and I saw it, and I came back out, and then I continued to my psychiatrist's office, and a weirdly competent receptionist who I'd never met before handed me an envelope with my name on it, which had a prescription on paper for the correct amount of the correct drug, which I could just take to a different pharmacy and get filled immediately. And I hadn't even explained what the problem was. It was something that this magical receptionist who I'd never met before had done, like, a month ago in some weird psychic anticipation of the problem. So, you know, it does feel like that was Sotherial forcing me to see the movie. And not because there was anything particularly important about it, just the sort of the principle of the thing, which I understand. I mean, that's why I anthropomorphize her as having that motive, is that's the way I feel myself about some of these things. It's just like, there's no compelling reason for you to not do what I say, so do it. But, you know, then most of the time, even if you do force people to do it for that reason, they're like, well, I don't understand why you made me watch that. Like, well, if you had just done it the first time I asked, it wouldn't be such a big deal that it would require such an elaborate justification. You know, that's the way it feels. Not as though it was a particularly important message, but just more in the nature of the relationship.